This is Self-Work, and I'm Dr. Margaret Rutherford. At Self-Work, we discuss psychological and emotional issues and what you can do about them, whether that's learning self-acceptance, taking action, or seeking therapy or treatment. 8 years ago, I extended the walls of my practice to reach those of you who might already be knowledgeable about mental health treatment, but also to those of you who might say you'd never darken the door of a therapist. And yet, you are here. I'll answer your questions while I invite you to take a few minutes for your own self-work. I've heard that there's a recent TikTok trend on being your therapist's favorite, even suggestions on how to make that happen. First, I'd ask myself if that's a dynamic in therapy. How could it be tied to you and your life? Were you never favored as a child? Was the fit between you and a parent really hard? Have you ever felt like someone's favorite, or are you longing for that? You can see how questions about this might be endless. Welcome to this week's edition of Self-Work. Today's Self-Work was inspired by feedback from members of my Facebook group when I asked for potential topics for the future, things they'd want to hear about. Several of them asked questions about the therapeutic relationship, so I'm going to answer them here. Everything from how to talk with your therapist about what's not working for you to how to leave therapy are some of the topics. And I found a great article on the Mindful Center website about this. The article outlined that just like contractors might like to work to build new houses where others love the challenge of remodeling an older one, some pastors may love giving sermons and others are much more comfortable focusing on pastoral care and at times dread that podium expectation every week. Everyone in every profession has an innate or learned comfort level and interest in certain kinds of work. Therapists are no different. And clients also have kinds of therapists they prefer and want to work with. When there's a match, a therapeutic alliance can be formed. We'll talk about what that is and how it's created in a bit, as well as other therapist-client dynamics that can feel problematic. One that's gotten a lot of attention on social media, especially TikTok, is, am I my therapist's favorite client? So we'll touch on that answer as well. I have a quick caveat. These are my opinions that fit with my way of doing therapy. And there are a lot of therapists that would agree with me, but not all. I just want to make sure you understand that. Now, I have been doing this for 30 years, but you can certainly search for and find other opinions. The SpeakPipe voicemail for this week left me with several thoughts about the impact of chronic trauma, trauma that seems to never end, especially in the lives of people who are living through it. Actually, the recording is even a little eerie, but I wanted to respond to this listener with some suggestions that I hope might be helpful to her. I don't have too much to offer, but as I say, her recording struck a chord with me that was hard for me to get out of my mind. I want to thank Choosing Therapy for including Self-Work in their top 15 podcast for 2024, and to thank all of you for tuning in, sharing, and helping to make Self-Work work. You are the reason that we keep growing, so my gratitude, of course, extends to you. BetterHelp has been a long-standing sponsor here, and here we are in March, 3 months into 2024. But did you promise yourself that this was the year you were going to do something different about your life? BetterHelp is an easy, could-happen-tomorrow, literally, way to do just that. We're ending 2023 and coming into 2024, and last year was a hard year for many. 2023 held cultural uproar and violence and worldwide anxiety. So in welcoming 2024, more people than ever are recognizing that their own sense of personal direction is being affected by what's going on in the world and not in a good way. Talking about that can help you see how to cope with those anxieties while also keeping your emotional stability in check. It helps to vent and to hear yourself make connections with your strengths while admitting your struggles and getting an objective perspective. After you make the first contact, BetterHelp's standard is to offer names of therapists to you in less than 2 days, and you can talk to them in a first session to see if it's a good fit by video, text, or chat. But if it's not a good fit, rather than going through an awkward call or email, you simply let BetterHelp know and they'll ask what it was you didn't like and find someone else for you. I'm a therapist because I got good therapy. I know how much of a difference it can make. And here's BetterHelp's offer for Self-Work listeners. 10% off your first month of sessions if you use this link, betterhelp.com/selfwork. There's never a better time than now, today, to reach out and get help. betterhelp.com/selfwork. I've often said that I became a therapist because I got good therapy. Now, that doesn't mean that I was always the recipient or co-creator of a good therapy experience. There was one psychiatrist in particular that was much more interested in hearing the gossip about my grad school faculty than he was in me, as he'd done a fellowship there years before. I'd come to him because of panic attacks, but he decided I had bipolar disorder and put me on lithium. Gosh, when he did, I could barely walk. I was so overly sedated. He had decided that my intense work ethic was a reflection of hypomania. And it's true, my personal life was a mess, but it was the wrong direction and the wrong diagnosis. And him talking about him, well, that was downright unacceptable. I left after only a few months, but it seemed a complete waste. It really wasn't. I learned a couple of things, but it wasn't good therapy. Not every therapist I've seen were great fits for me either. My first therapist, who I absolutely loved, had a near-death experience, which had led her into an entirely new life focus, very spiritual in nature. Maybe that was not what I most needed at the time, but she was much more helpful than Dr. Lithium. For years, I carried a meditation of sorts in my wallet that I found comforting to read and remember, as I was trying to separate from my enmeshment with my mom at that time in my life. And so that therapist had really helped me. But there were two, especially, that made a huge difference. Two therapists, Annabeth, who helped me through my first divorce, and Larry, who was there after my second and helped me restore my emotional stability. Two therapists who weren't perfect, but were just right for me at the time. There's no other relationship like your relationship with your therapist. The relationship is focused on you, your goals, your healing, your feelings, your thoughts, your concerns. That's what's called a therapeutic alliance. You trust and feel a bond with your therapist. They get you. And goals have been discussed between the two of you, and you feel safe, knowing that whatever is shared in therapy stays in therapy, with the exception of imminent danger. And even that is not what many people think. Your therapist isn't going to call the police or your family or an emergency contact if you talk about real struggles you have, even questioning whether or not you want to live. Now, if you are in imminent danger, then your physical safety is preeminent. But talking about all your feelings, all of them, is also vital. So, let's get to those questions that my Facebook group had for me. There are four of them. How to be real with your therapist about what's not working, why you might want to feel that your therapist really, really likes you, how do you handle the fear that you're too much for your therapist, and then how do you leave therapy? So let's take the first one. Just to remind you, that was how to be real with your therapist about what's not working. Now, you may feel such a bond with your therapist. You think they're trying hard to help, for example, and you appreciate either the insights they've led you to or suggestions they've made. So when what they're saying doesn't fit or you're uncomfortable with it, you might not want to hurt their feelings. My guess, if this is a problem with your therapist, it's likely a problem in your life. In fact, when I was writing this, I remembered a client when I first talked to him on the phone, I had written down a wrong name. I'd written down Cliff and his name was Biff. I don't know why those names came to me. And I called him like Cliff in the first four sessions. And finally he said, "Margaret, my name is Biff." And I looked at him and I said, first I apologized. And then I said, "I think we need to work on your assertiveness." So if you're one of these people who are scared you're going to hurt the feelings of your therapist, again, maybe that's a problem in your life. You've learned somehow that assertiveness, saying when something doesn't fit or even makes you mad, is something you rarely, if ever, do. The process of therapy, what happens not in the content of what you talk about, but how the relationship progresses, the process of the relationship, often reflects what's happening in your own life. For example, if you miss sessions because you aren't arranging for your kids to be picked up after school, then making time for yourself might be a problem in your life. Or agreeing to meeting times that you knew when you made them would be difficult could suggest, again, not being assertive enough with your therapist and then others. Here's a dramatic example. A very busy couple I worked with, well known in the community for all they did for others, told me in the first session, "It's going to be very hard to schedule these sessions, but we're going to try. Our marriage is in trouble." What happened? They came twice, and those two sessions were weeks apart. They canceled a lot. The reality of the choices they were making in their life were evident in the process of therapy. I mentioned that to them. They just shrugged their shoulders and said there's nothing to do. So it was very sad to watch and hear. But what if my way of doing therapy or what I suggested to a client didn't seem right to them? I'd want and urge them to tell me, to act assertively. Hearing firsthand about what's not welcomed, or the client doesn't feel ready for, perhaps, or just feels damn wrong, is something that helps me know my client better. I'm fallible. I make mistakes. It's okay to say, what you said just then does not fit for me. And then we collaborate on how to go forward from there. Trust is established even more tightly because disappointment can be voiced and heard. I might ask, what did it feel for me to not get what you were trying to tell me? Or how did you decide to bring this up in therapy so we could talk about it? Everything that happens in therapy is information that could be helpful to you and to your therapist. That is so important. Let's move on to the second question. Why do I want to feel that my therapist likes me? I've heard that there's a recent TikTok trend on being your therapist's favorite, even suggestions on how to make that happen. First, I'd ask myself, if that's a dynamic in therapy, how could it be tied to you and your life? Were you never favored as a child? Was the fit between you and a parent really hard? Have you ever felt like someone's favorite, or are you longing for that? You can see how questions about this might be endless for why this dynamic exists, why you want to feel like you're your therapist's favorite. Recently, someone I was seeing asked me about where I'd gotten a beautiful box that holds my cards and sits on my table. I answered, kind of without thinking, "Oh, I've had that for years. A client's father made it and she gave it to me." I could see my client's wheels turning. "Do people often give you presents?" "No," I said quickly. I could see she was struggling with sudden uncertainty. I reassured her that there had been very special circumstances for this gift, which is why I'd accepted it, which was true. Now, telling her all that was probably a mistake on my part, as this is not my most secure client. But we waded through those waters together, and all was well. It's not come up again, but if it did, we'd talk about it some more. So you can see that whatever is said can be used as a way of collaborating, of understanding more. And sometimes, like mentioning where the box came from, your therapist is going to make a mistake. But the answer to this question to me is also much simpler than that. Feeling appreciated, liked, favored feels good. And if you come to therapy, you're likely demoralized about something. You're in need of a sense of stability and safety. Feeling cared for can be part of that. The favorite part can always be talked about. Let me say this as well, and I'll suggest that there's a link in the show notes that you might want to click on if this interests you particularly. All therapists, as I said in the introduction, have a kind of client they like working with or have been trained to work with. Trauma victims, highly sensitive people, women, men, LGBTQ folks, people with anxiety disorders, teenagers. A therapist can often become known for that work and develop a niche or specialty for that. In fact, if you look on their website, their description of their practice should reflect that. For example, go to mine at drmargaretrutherford.com and you'll see lots of information and interest in depression and perfectionism and early trauma. So part of your relationship with your therapist will be a product of the fit between your issue and their interest. Hopefully, when you talk to them prior to the first visit and brought up something they don't have a lot of experience with, they tell you, "Oh, I'm so sorry, but I don't really work with whatever that issue is," and then refer you to someone else. For example, if ADHD is the primary problem for a patient, "I know about ADHD, but I don't keep up with the literature on it, so I usually refer." Now, that has nothing to do with your likability, and it's important to realize that and not feel rejected. Just like as a parent, you might have an easier fit with one child than another. Your therapist and you might be a very easy fit. What they enjoy working on is on your front burner to work on as well. If the two of you are not a good fit, either you can say so because it won't be going well, or the therapist should say something. For example, it seems that you need and want to work on X, and I really don't have expertise in that area. Here's another example about style of therapy, and I'll use myself. I'm a very, what I'd call, active or direct therapist. I ask people to do and read and write and try lots of things, just like I do here on the podcast. But some clients don't like that. That's not their expectation of therapy, and that's okay. They should work with someone who's different than me. Sometimes when I sense then early on, this is not going to be a good fit. Maybe I've asked them to do something for several weeks in a row and they've come back and said, no, I didn't try that. Now that could be because I'm going too fast and we need to slow down, but it could also be something that needs to be talked about what their expectations are of therapy and whether my style of working fits that expectation. Now this kind of ties in with the next topic that my Facebook group brought up. How do I know and trust that I'm not too much for my therapist? If this is an issue with a client, I might hear something like, sometimes I bet you get tired of me, or I hate to keep bringing this up because it's the same thing I was crying about a month ago. Now, I could talk a lot about this, and there are several scenarios that might be possible. One, that's the message the client got in their family or culture, and they're afraid that they'll find the same thing in therapy. So it's about fear. I'm too much. Two, they might be becoming more aware of their own cycle of distress that may keep them in chaos and how they play a role in it. But they don't know how to talk about that. So they just kind of talk about being too much because, again, they're beginning to see maybe their own role. Here's a third possibility, and this is a therapist-client dynamic. They feel an expectation of some kind from the therapist, which could be accurate, that some kind of movement occur, and they're becoming afraid that they can't move in that way, which is, again, about fear, and again, can be talked about. Here's an example. Someone might say to me, Margaret, you keep telling me to feel my feelings, but I can't even remember the last time I expressed sadness. And so I'm asking them to do something that they don't know how to do. There are probably other things that this kind of fear can stem from, but that's what comes to my mind right now. Again, I stress, talking about it can help. Talking about it is movement. Having the fear and not talking about it will likely paralyze therapy. Maybe the message the therapist needs to hear is to slow down. Maybe the message the client can benefit from is that they're catastrophizing the risk or keeping themselves stuck in some way. But the overall dynamic is, how can we together make this work for you, the client? Here's the fourth topic. How do I leave therapy? Of course, there are practical reasons to leave. Time and money, mostly. Many therapies are short-term and directed toward specific change, so they're more time-limited in the first place. If your financial situation has changed, many therapists, not all, will work with you about that topic. But again, you may have done really great work, and it's just simply time to leave. Especially if you've been seeing someone for quite a while, and either you feel like you've made progress and ready to go on your own, or you're ready to just take a break. How do you end the relationship? How do you hit the pause button? How do you say goodbye? It can be emotional. The office space itself may have earned a kind of safety for you. My clients tell me that as soon as they walk into my waiting room, their minds slow down. They feel better, more calm. So you're moving out of those regular visits to that physical space that you associate with feeling better. Then, of course, there's the safety of the emotional space and your therapist themselves. That can be tough to leave. People ask, do therapists get sad when clients leave? Of course we do. However, if they leave having achieved some sense of calm or resolve or new insight or relief or healing or whatever you want to call it, the goodbye, although poignant, is the reflection of our client's ownership of that change. I'll take it from here, kind of thing. And that can feel wonderful. As I tell people all the time, it's my job to do myself out of a job. Now, I always ask, how would you know if you'd like or need to come back? And we talk about it. I left Larry. Remember him? I left Larry when I left Dallas, and I wasn't all that happy about it. But then he said to me, Margaret, when you think about asking me a question, could you imagine what I'd say? And the answer was, yeah, pretty much of the time. The process he's talking about, or the fancy word for it, is internalization. I'd internalized Larry. Like if your grandparent dies and you love them and you're never going to see them again, and yet you know what they'd think or say about maybe your upcoming marriage or your new job. And you can tell yourself that. You can remind yourself that. You've internalized your grandparent. You just know. Your therapist is like that. You'll always have them and what you valued about working with them in your mind, your body, and your heart.
SpeakPipe message from DrMargaretRutherford.com.
Hello. I definitely suffer from complex trauma. The things that I know to be affecting me and contributing to a perceived depression are: my friend set me up to get raped by spiking my drink and organizing the raper. The cops closed that case without investigation. My ex-boyfriend tried to kill me 4 years ago. The cops closed that case without investigation. My parents got divorced. My clinical psychologist betrayed me. And this is all in my teens and early to mid-20s. Then I was like, stuff humans, because what the hell? And I focused on my career. So I built a scalable tech business and put on your seatbelt. So I partnered with a business, a global corporation, to scale my business, and in the process became a patented inventor and trademark owner, which is amazing. However, the global corporation stole my concept. They used my trademark without my permission. They generated seven figures in return by using my work. They gave me a cease and desist to get me arrested if I ever spoke about this. They paid my attorneys to step back from my case. They paid the cops not to pursue my case, and then threatened my life if I continued speaking about the incident on social media. And then finally, they updated their company policies in private to pretend that they stand up against the things they were doing to me. And as if that's not a lot, my dentist is suing me because she ruined my face.
I almost didn't feature this voicemail because she didn't actually ask a question of me. She seemed to need to talk about, and with good reason most likely, this chronic trauma that had happened to her. Sexual abuse, abandonment, betrayal, lawsuits, threats. She tried to soldier on through it all. But did you hear her laugh at the end? Kind of a giggle, or a giggle with some other kind of emotion tied into it? When I heard that, that concerned me a lot. So I'm featuring this voicemail to reach out to her, as I did through email as well. If she hasn't been in treatment for the many horrors she's had in her life, if she's only tried to just push through them, that may be part of the problem. Obviously, I don't know. I can hear the fight in her, the determination, but the laughter at the end confuses me. It seems, and I can only say seems to imply, a, well, so what, shit happens to me all the time kind of response. Now, finding something funny can be helpful, but it also can be out of place. A lack of empathy or self-compassion isn't funny. So here's a message to this listener. Please, if you're struggling, ask for help. You may think, so much has happened, no one can help me. But stories like yours are more common than you think, even as horrific as they are. You reached out to me. Let that reaching out be the first step towards seeking other help. You're more than worth it. There is another thought that comes to me. If you've had some kind of role in creating some of this chaos, which of course could be not true or true, then it would be important for you to see your role in this. Again, I'm not saying you're to blame, quite the opposite, but I am saying that it can be important to see what role you're playing in this terrible chaos that you've lived through. Thank thank you all for being here. I want to remind you about the self-work merch that is possible for you to buy now. There's a link in the show notes. It is a wonderful way to support, financially support this podcast so I can keep it free. I've now brought it to you for 8 years. It's a great tax write-off for me, but it's expensive. So if you could help out and spread the self-work message a little bit, that would be great. And that Facebook group I was talking about earlier, you can join me there at facebook.com/groups/self-work. Thank you, as always, for being here. I hope this was a helpful session to you. Let me know. Email me at askdrmargaret@drmargaretrutherford.com and let me know what you would like for me to talk about, just like my Facebook group did. That would be so welcome, as well as leaving me a SpeakPipe voicemail so I can hear you ask your question. Again, my gratitude. Please take care of yourself, your loved ones, and your community. I'm Dr. Margaret, and this has been Self Work.